This is a HeadGum Original.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Object is to keep your balls on the table and knock everybody else's off.
The band has been together 16 years.
It's a damn impossible way of life. I couldn't live with 20 years on the road. I don't think I could even discuss it.
We gave our final concert, the band's final concert. We called it The Last Waltz.
Such a night.
Why'd you have to get so drunk and lead me on that way?
You just picked up a hitcher, prisoner of the white lines on the freeway.
Has taken a lot of the great ones. Hank Williams, Buddy Holly, Otis Redding, Janis, Jimi Hendrix, Elvis. It's a damn impossible way of life.
Last Waltz, a film by Martin Scorsese.
Newcomers.
Ooh, wow! It's season 7 of Newcomers. I'm Nicole Byer.
I'm Lauren Lapkus.
And this time we are working our way through the filmography of the director, Martin Scorsese. Also, we have producer Allie and producer Anya here.
And this season's going to be 10 episodes, so we've picked all the essential movies of Scorsese's super long and prolific career. But of course, we can't get to everything, and we've seen The Wolf of Wall Street.
We've seen Wolf of Wall Street.
Today we're going to be discussing what is considered one of the greatest music documentary films ever made, 1978's The Last Waltz.
Yep, and The Last Waltz is available for free on Tubi and Freevee with a subscription on Prime, and you know, you can get it for a fee if you want to pay for it on other streamers.
I'm honestly so surprised that all of his movies are on Tubi. I'm just flabbergasted.
But I love it. Tubi Originals and Marty Scorsese. Those are the two options you have.
And we're going to spoil this music documentary for you. We're going to tell you who sings in it and why.
It is.
So if you want to, but honestly, I would say watching this makes more sense than hearing us talk about without watching it, because you want to hear the music. But we're so excited for our guest today. We have with us Stephanie Allen, who is an actor, writer, and comedian who you know from The L Word, Generation Q, One Mississippi, and In a World. And you also may have seen her perform with Mae Martin and Alana Johnston in their show Ask Us Anything. And you can watch Tig Notaro's new special Hello Again, which Stephanie directed, streaming on Amazon Prime now. Stephanie!
Hi!
Stephanie! Thanks for being here.
Guys, thanks for having me.
We're so excited to sit down with you and talk about this. Now, I know you love movies. Do you feel a deep connection with Scorsese movies, or
yeah,
where are you? Yeah.
And then watching this, I'm like, he's so good.
Yeah. What's your favorite?
Oh, I like Casino.
Oh, are we going to watch that?
Are we watching that?
Okay, great.
I think that can be my favorite. I don't know. Have you guys seen that?
No, we don't know.
Sure haven't.
But we're excited. I was so surprised that this was a documentary. I wasn't expecting it.
Me either.
And then on our previous episode, the Action Boys were telling us that Scorsese has made like a lot of great documentaries mm-hmm. that are amazing. And I'm like, okay, I didn't know that at all. And I was
Had you heard of this movie?
No. Nope. And I like the band. I actually like totally listened to this kind of music in high school. This was like this is my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
For a special period of my life. So like, I'm shocked I hadn't seen this, because it is so the kind of thing I would have watched in high school and be like, this is the coolest thing I've ever yeah. seen. Nicole, I already got a glimpse into your personal opinion. I'd love to hear just a little bit more.
I didn't know anything about the band. I didn't really know anything about any of these people. I didn't really like the music. I thought the shots were interesting, but this was for me, not for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. I mean, honestly, if I didn't have a history with listening to like classic rock, I don't think I would. I don't know what I would be thinking watching. Like this was the kind of music my friends and I would drive around and listen to in high school, like all the time. So I felt very like, but at the same time, I didn't know anything about the band, and I'd never mm-hmm. seen any of the people in it. I don't know any of their names, and I knew some of the singers who came out to join them, but I didn't know everyone. And actually at the beginning, there was one person like, and obviously no introduction needed. I was like, gonna have to put a name on the screen.
Do need an introduction.
Like it made me think like we should have names on things, like even like any like current pop star yeah. documentary, put every single person's name. You don't know who's yeah. gonna be watching this or when, like, we need the facts.
And I feel like now I noticed that watching it too, that now you would totally have a name, what they're like, what they play, what they're from. Mm-hmm. And everyone yeah. that came on is just like, and here they are.
I know. Well, it was kind of great though, because it's like that thing of like what I always think about music, that like in the 70s, there was much less music than there is now. Mm-hmm. You kind of could know all of it. Like,
yeah,
like, you could like
crazy.
Hear all of it. And you would in your life.
Yeah. You would just be in the know, because you're like, okay, there's 10 artists. Great. I know all 10 of them. Now there's just so fucking many. Too many. If you ask
and
me.
My TikTok singers who I love so much can't keep up with all of them. Oh, this is, okay. So we have this new segment called Spotted mm-hmm. where we look into the movies and see if we see any of the following celebrity sightings. So, is one of Marty's boys there, which would be Robert De Niro, Harvey Keitel, Joe Pesci, or Leonardo DiCaprio? Do we get Marty's mom, Catherine Scorsese, or do we get Marty himself?
I think it's
only Marty.
Yeah, just Marty.
I wanted more, actually.
More Marty or more Leo. Of his friends?
Well, yeah, I would love to see Leo.
Yet.
Yeah, I want to see DiCaprio, Leo. Just a baby.
And he's like, he's going to be a star. I wanted more Marty, because I was kind of like, I think maybe it's just kind of how documentaries are now, where people are, they explain a lot mm-hmm. more. And that was cool that it wasn't like that. But I kind of wanted more information, just, and I thought maybe he would talk to us about why he's making this or who these people yeah. are. Like, even though I know that they're a very famous band, we didn't get a ton in the interviews, even explaining like why this is so crucial that we document this. And
But yet they had, I feel like Robbie Robertson had such a vibe, which so many people then did, of like, this is important and what we're doing is important and we established culture and we must. And like now, if somebody was doing that, you'd be like, you are a loser.
Like, it's totally true. He was so sure of their position in culture.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the fact that they named their band The Band.
The which Band, like, yeah.
Like, you're just going like, that's... It was hard to Google them.
Like, well, there's another band named Da Band that was created by Sean P. Diddy Combs on
Making Da Band. Yes.
And now I know that's not an original name. They stole it from literally, The Band.
This was Making The Band, and then he did Making Da Band.
Because The Band was taken.
The Band was taken, but not Da Band.
Do you guys want to know why they are called The Band?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
actually,
please.
They talk about it in the movie a little bit where they're
they
like,
do.
Everyone just called, because they were Bob Dylan's backing band and everyone called them The Band.
Well, and they had horrible ideas for their name otherwise. Yeah. They were like, we were thinking about honkies or crackers.
And I was like, that's bad. I'm glad nobody went with that.
Like, you're not going to be lasting. Like, it is important to have a decent name for your band. Like, it's that will get in the way.
But also, you have to, like, say it out loud. Like, welcome to the stage, The Crackers. No.
The Honkies. And then the drummer looked like he was on My Two Dads. Did anyone else feel this? His hair was, like, feathered so beautifully. But then when you saw him in the interviews, it was, like, a stark contrast. Like, he was sort of, like, he had, like, what David Sedaris calls party teeth.
Party teeth.
Oh, yeah.
Party teeth.
Which I love that phrase so much.
What is that? Like when they're like chipped and look wooden?
I think they're just doing their own thing, having a little party. Everyone's
kind of
mingling.
They're having a nice time in that mouth. Mingling. Oh. One's going to the bar. One's in the back dancing. This felt more or less like a documentary and more like a concert film with a couple of interviews.
Yeah, because they really did play the entire song, every song.
Yeah.
Like, even as someone who enjoys it, and I was actually, like, tapping my toes and moving my... I was having a good time.
Tapping your toes.
I was, like, sitting at my kitchen table, like, yes. But it also kind of took me all day to watch because I was like, pause, move, do something. Like, it was like, okay, I'm going to watch full performances. But I wanted to actually see every moment because it felt like it was shot specifically, you know, a certain way. Yeah. I didn't want to just let it wash over me and miss something. But okay, well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get into the whole doc.
Remember in 2018 when border control separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents and deported the parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, 6 years later, there are hundreds of families who still have not been reunified. Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm-reduction-based practice. Since 2018, they've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family to find legal representation, housing, and counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet. Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you'd see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like me and believe that families belong together, join me in supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today. You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity to donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website at alotrolado.org/volunteer. eltrolado.org/volunteer.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. My social battery right now, where would I put it? Ooh, I mean, I'm kind of looking to connect with friends. I'm also looking to retreat a little bit and be by myself. It's hard to know exactly what you need at any given time. And it can be so easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up so much. After the winter, the spring is here. Well, what's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I started therapy when I was about 30, and it was so, so helpful for me for learning about myself, learning about boundaries, learning about my relationships with other people, and how to deal with other people. There's so many things you can benefit from therapy. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. So just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/newcomers today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/newcomers.
We're back. This documentary was released April 26, 1978.
Now, The Last Waltz documents the farewell performance by the influential Canadian-American rock band, The Band. Also didn't know they were Canadian. They're so country. They're so southern. At the Winterland Ballroom in San Francisco on Thanksgiving 1976. Did anyone else really want to see more of San Francisco outside of that venue?
Yes, in the beginning.
I was like, this is interesting. Craziest place. San Francisco still can feel wild when you go there. But it's, of course, been, like, you know, very cleaned up in many ways, and like it's all like a lot. There's a lot of areas that are just like high end shopping, but like this was like fully cracked out. Like I was like, what is this line? I think it was the line to go to the concert, but it like looked insane. I was like, zoom in on these people. I want to see who they are.
And then I feel like it's like there were some people too. Like this woman had on like a little bow tie and a jacket, and I was like, oh right, Annie Hall would have just come out the year before. And you can, like, just that whole little vibe, you know?
That's so funny. What would that be now? Like, I guess dressing 90s?
Yeah, whatever's going on TikTok. Like, flared leggings are a thing, which I'm like, these are just yoga pants.
Wow, flared leggings. I had some of those in eighth grade. I thought they made me look amazing.
Yep, those are my little Steve Madden stompers.
Yes! The platforms that you can slide into. Oh my God. Yeah. They're back. I actually almost bought some from Target that were like the Steve Madden ones. And I was like, can I just buy these? And I was like, I don't need this shoe. Like for many reasons. A, I'll be 6'3". B, I just don't need it. It's like maybe not a good look for me at my age, you know.
I don't know. I think you should get them.
Okay, I'll do it.
Okay, I actually have them.
Okay,
this is what I was tapping my toe in.
The band was made up of musicians Robbie Robertson, Rick Danko, Garth Hudson, Richard Manuel, and Levon Helm. And they started as a backing band for the rockabilly singer Ronnie Hawkins, but gained recognition as Bob Dylan's first electric rock backing band in 1966. Where do y'all stand on Bob Dylan?
I don't really know Bob Dylan. I truly knew nothing about this going in and didn't learn that much. I feel like I just was like, oh, okay, I'm watching performances.
Yeah, you were just being suscepted to like a Woodstock moment.
Yeah. Basically. Well, that's because I love Bob Dylan so much and I love Joni Mitchell. I love all those performers. And then when just watching it again, I'm like, are they all just so weird? Like, and just like glaringly unhealthy, which I know is what they were saying, but I'm like, they're 30. They're like in their early 30s in that.
They look so much older.
Everyone looks so much older. I feel like everyone looks older in like the 80s and 90s and maybe like the late 2000s, people started looking a little younger. Does that make sense?
I think that's true. Like, I think 50 kind of became like youthful in a new way now. And I just saw this funny video on Instagram that was like,
J-Lo and like Blanche from Golden Girls like switching hair and how it makes them look, they were the same age, and how it makes
That's
them
insane.
Look so different.
That's so funny.
And it is so much of what it is. Like, we have a style now for, as you get older, the at least what's trendy now is more youthful looking, I think. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if that was the perception then, that like the bigger hair or the shorter hair or whatever was youthful. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I do think hair plays such a role. But they, but like a lot of their hair, like Joni Mitchell was like kind of the same her whole entire life, like her style and like yeah. look. She's so amazing. And she was the only woman, which I really noticed. I was like, what's mm-hmm. that like? And I kind of assumed she wasn't part of the sort of rock and roll lifestyle just based on who she is. But maybe she was. Do you know, Stephanie?
If she was in
like
that,
partying and being.
I
like,
think so.
Yeah.
I don't know if as hard as all of them, though. I don't. They just seemed like really fucked up.
I know. So.
They, which they say, like, I like Martin Scorsese says in that time period, like he was just doing cocaine 24/7. And I know even on this movie, they in post like removed coke from a lot of their noses.
Oh, that sucks.
That
they should have
very
left that in.
Funny. Yeah. That
don't you think they
should have
left
like,
that?
Get that yeah. little white, get that little white ring.
But I feel like that's sort of the thing that this movie is missing is like. The reality, because like there's a point where yeah. where I think it's Robbie who's like, or one of them is like, you said we weren't going to talk about the women or something, and we're going to leave that part out. But it's like, so otherwise you're just sitting around chatting, like that's
and
not what's happening.
Really boring story.
So boring and so slow. Like yeah. I was like, speed it up. Like what happened? What happened? Who did what? Okay.
Like I think they were like, let's focus on the music and not. The salaciousness of it, but I'm like, but that's a part of the music that influences the music. That to me is interesting.
And it's right. also like, I think maybe, but maybe that's just from our experience of like seeing where life goes from then to now, mm-hmm. like where it's like, oh, that is actually the interesting part. But like when you're making that and there aren't that many documentaries like this, you think that's yeah. going to make it look bad or something. I don't mm-hmm. know.
Or yeah, or that it makes you look bad. But then it almost makes them seem worse. So they're like, don't talk about all the pussy we're getting.
I know.
And then to like say pussy, I was like, you guys, like, it's so odd. I was just trying to think of one person today, if they were like at the height of their career, like smoking, drinking, being like, gotta get off the road and all the girls. Like, you'd just be like, yikes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they were doing it for 16 years, like touring, which I'm like, that's a long time. And especially if that's what you're doing the whole time, is it's mainly that. And then you mix in a banjo or two or whatever.
You mix in a banjo or two. Well, they went on to release several influential albums on their own, played Woodstock, and charted with hits like The Wait, which I had never heard, and
oh,
Up on Cripple Creek, which I had never heard. But after 16 years of playing music and touring, Robbie Robertson was worried that drugs, alcohol, and the rock and roll lifestyle out on the road would be harmful to himself and his bandmates. So he asked the band to call it quits. It's funny that it took 16 years for someone to go, this isn't good for me.
I know. And also, like, it is weird, though, because they're not showing any of that, that you're like, is it that bad? Like, I don't know. Like, there's a part of me that was going like, I mean, it sounds bad just to do that for 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not seeing, we weren't seeing any of the, like, actual behind the scenes. And, like, it literally looks like they just sit around and they were like, they told that story about someone who was, like, spitting into a bucket and then he thought it was, like, tobacco or something. Then it was all blood. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what's this story? And I was like, who are they talking about?
And then the
who
guy died. Horror?
And then he died.
It was like, why? Wait, he was going to be in the band, but then wasn't? Or was it just a random story of like, yeah, and then we found out he died. So that's what the blood must have been about.
Right. And I was like, but what is this? What are you talking about?
It's just a fun memory.
It's the part where they're talking about Sonny Boy Williamson.
Okay, who is that? Because I missed
like
the name.
Like an old blues musician. I think they're just talking about like crazy times in the road, meeting crazy yeah. other musicians. And then, yeah. And then yeah. who's that?
So Robertson wanted to do one final show and he planned a gig at the venue where they had their first show as the band in 1969. Robertson had met Scorsese at the premiere of his movie Mean Streets and could tell from the way the director used music in that film that he had a deep connection to it. And in his memoir, Robertson wrote, "Marty was the right man for this. He had music under his skin."
What a funny thing to say about someone. Not music in his bones, not music in every fiber of his being. Yeah. It was under his skin.
Like the bugs crawling in me when I'm on coke. Wait, was it Joni Mitchell who had that thing where she thought she had bugs in her?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what you call it, but it's like a sort of like mental, like.
Is it? A illness. Psychosis?
Yeah, but yeah. I don't know how permanent it is, but I feel like she had it for like a good amount of time or
where
something.
Where you feel like you have bugs on you.
Ugh. Oh my God.
So scary.
Joni Mitchell, like kind of in her later years has sort of been like, I never got my due. I should have been like, because she was a woman, she's like, I feel like nobody studies my lyrics like they do Bob Dylan. Like he's a genius, but I'm not.
That's interesting. I didn't know that people perceive her that way because I feel like she's really revered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't think she ever got the money or the like.
Yeah, or the acquisition.
All of yeah.
Well, now she's having this moment with Brandi Carlile where it feels like she's really being like put on a pedestal. I don't know if you know about this, Nicole, but like this
sure
singer Brandi Carlile, who's like she kind of to me kind of came out of nowhere but became like really huge. She's been like touring with Joni and like singing her songs with her. And Joni's probably in her 80s now, I would assume. And is so she, you know, needs extra help and all this stuff. But then like they have these big epic moments on stage. So it feels like she's getting like some of that now.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. she can't stand. So she like I saw Brandi Carlile perform with her and then the whole Hollywood Bowl saying happy birthday to Joni Mitchell while she like sat in her chair like a throne and it kind of seemed insane.
I mean, like, yeah, that
I
is
I was like, what are we
wild.
Doing?
What are you yeah.
The whole Hollywood Bowl singing happy birthday.
This woman who can sing is being shouted out by people on the wrong key and yeah. she's like, I'm a legend.
She's like, this is one of the worst songs ever written. Thanks for shouting at me. That's so crazy. That's cool you got to see that. Were you up really mm-hmm. close?
Yeah, it was pretty close. But it just also felt, yeah, I guess it was great. But and now she's doing, it just kind of feel like, oh, and we're bringing her out. And everybody just goes, you know,
yeah.
yay. I mean, mm-hmm. I love good, Joni Mitchell.
No, me too. They had a good performance on the Grammys. That was really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. I saw that. She was in her chair. She had a little stick. I
That's
said,
what
ooh, she
was.
Casting a spell.
Yeah. She's going to do a spell.
Let's see. Where are we? Okay. At first, Robertson just wanted to have Ronnie Hawkins and Bob Dylan join them for the farewell show since they were such a big part of the band's success. But soon, a long list of their fellow musicians and musical mentors signed on, and the set list grew to over 42 songs, which is too long. In the end, the show lasted for over 5 hours. I would be so mad if I went to a show and it lasted for 5 hours. Show promoter Bill Graham even managed to serve a turkey dinner to all 5,000 attendees before the music began.
Wow.
That's
a
too
turkey
much.
Dinner. That's like such a specific. What? Oh, because it was Thanksgiving.
It was Thanksgiving.
I was like, why are you just deciding everyone?
Why turkey?
Seems
turkey
like a
gets
lot.
Dry.
Yeah. I see. Okay. I'm curious where you guys both stand on this. What do you feel about concerts in general?
I like concerts. I think they're nice. I don't think they should be 5 hours long. Yeah. I think two, maybe three. I think Beyonce was three and I enjoyed every moment of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm always surprised when people say like they hate live music, but they're yeah. definitely.
I think it's weird when people say that because I'm like,
me too.
Have you ever been to a concert? Have you been to a good one?
No, and that's why, because I connect to these songs, there were a lot of moments when I was watching that I was like, oh my God, it would have been so cool to be in the audience for this. Like, this would have been really amazing. 5 hours, I don't know, but maybe in the 70s I would think that was good. I don't know.
Yeah,
what else would
else
I have to
do?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I can't look at my phone.
I feel like when you like really like someone, there's nothing better than seeing them live. But
yeah.
then if you're like not into it, it's just pure torture. Yeah. And it feels even like, I don't know, if I don't like the music, I'm like, God, hurry. Oh my God, you're doing another song.
I've been to concerts where I wasn't super into the artist, but I had a good time because other people were having a fun time.
Yeah.
So then I was like, oh, I guess I could, for now, you know, get into it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My friend who had never been to a Taylor, didn't know anything about Taylor Swift, went to the Taylor Swift concert by herself to like see what was up. And she was immediately a Swiftie.
Research.
Yeah.
I was like, she's getting to the bottom of it.
Instantaneously, she was like, the crowd was insane and I got it. Like, it was like, so I totally think you can be influenced by that too. Like the excitement of everyone around you. And
I love this friend who said, I'm going to get to the bottom of Taylor Swift alone. And then immediately was like, I love her. Yeah. I get it.
It was honestly the best Instagram stories of the night for me.
And this person didn't know any Taylor Swift songs?
She didn't really. She kind of just didn't know what the whole thing was. But it was like when that big Eras tour was happening and she was like, I just want to know what this...
That big
she got last
tour.
Minute tickets and went alone. I know, look at how I'm talking about it. Newcomers Taylor Swift. But yeah, I was totally like, oh, this looks so fun. So production for Scorsese and his crew was intense. He hired 7 cinematographers, which seems like so many.
That's,
it didn't
yeah,
feel
that's a
like,
lot.
Yeah.
All heavy hitters that had worked on some of the most iconic movies of the time, like Easy Rider and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. He storyboarded each song in the set list for certain angles, shots, and light cues to line up with the song lyrics. However, when it came to the day of the show, it was impossible to keep up with Scorsese's plans in the live concert setting, and not all songs were captured as they had to take breaks to reload film and change batteries. They weren't even sure the 35mm film cameras they were using would hold up to that many hours of constant shooting. It had never been done before.
Whoa.
At one point, Scorsese had instructed all the camera operators to shut down and reload, but one cinematographer had taken off his headset because he was so annoyed with Scorsese's constant instructions, and his running camera ended up being the only reason they captured the performance with blues legend Muddy Waters. No offense to anyone involved. Why would you have everyone stop at the same time?
Yeah. Like, if you have 7 cinematographers, you probably have more than 7 cameras. Just keep 3 going.
Yeah.
Put 2 down, you know? Who am I? I'm not Martin Scorsese.
I don't know,
I'm
anything
not criticizing
about
him. I know nothing about filmmaking. That's just, you know, a little thought that, you know, popped in.
He hears this and he's like, I should have done that.
Yeah, he's never thought about it. He's never understood why.
I will say, like, I didn't love the music. It was not for me. Uh-huh. But I could tell that there was thought behind how it was shot. And it did draw me in at times. And I was like, oh, okay, I think I like this. And I was like, nah, I don't know. I spent a lot of time being like, do I like this?
Yeah, I mean, I even felt that way as someone who likes the songs. There were points where I was like, okay. I never listened to the band all in a row. Mm-hmm. You let the band comes on the radio and you like that song. Like, I don't feel like I'm like, let me put on the band album. Like,
yeah.
So, like, it was kind of the most the band I've ever gotten at one time. But I loved the cameos and, like, we're going to get into the songs, but the Van Morrison, I cried, actually.
Really?
Oh. Like, I love Van Morrison, but I've never seen him sing. And this, I just don't really seek out, like, the videos of old singers. I just don't really do that. But I will listen to the music and love the music. But, like, he's amazing. Like, watching him live, I was like, this is amazing. And I would have been floored if I was there. And, like, he also made me think about, because he's like this kind of, like, looks like just like your average drunk white dude, honestly. And I was like, again, a lot of things connect back to improv for me. I was like, this is what improvisers in Chicago feel like on stage. Like, I'm a rock star. And it's like, there's like, I knew guys who like were just like that guy. And then you're Van Morrison. You're like, your voice is like this amazing, iconic voice that just like can stir so much emotion. And I was just, I was like, I really love that part. It made me want to seek out more old footage.
He does really, especially in that, he really has that like guy at church, like, that gets drunk.
He probably was.
Guy at church that gets drunk. Oh, that guy? Loves the Lord and a little alcohol.
The final film starts out with the band performing their encore song, a cover of Marvin Gaye's Don't Do It, then flashes back to the start of the night and follows the rest of the set more or less chronologically. Now, I also wanted a history. I wanted, like, old photos or, like, some things to be put in. Like, because when I thought of them doing it for 16 years and they looked like they'd been through it, but they also looked young, that I'm like, well, how tiny were they when they started? Like, they're little babies when they started.
A little baby band.
I would have liked to have seen, like, some footage of, like, their first shows and, like, I don't know. Because I just really, I feel like we don't also get a lot of, in the culture, we don't get a lot of, like, random bands doing that. You get, like, the Beatles. Like, there's, like, a lot of, like, you see those things over and over again. But I'm like, I have no idea what this would have looked like. I don't know what kind of audience they would have. And, like, it's this very specific genre compared to, like, you know, the 60s, other 60s stuff.
And I feel like now we're so well-versed in documentary that the expectations of what you need are, it's like so high. And then with that, it's just like, oh, wow. So they just like got Martin Scorsese when he wasn't even, he hadn't done like all his huge movies. Like he was just getting going and he's just like, they're all just fucking around.
Yeah.
Like that's what I kind of liked about it, where it was like, wow, you have, for hearing like all of his planned shots, it almost seemed like they had no plan. That it was just true. Like when they're walking around, it's like, so, okay, walk through here. Show me what's in this. Like, you know, when they show the studio.
Yeah. He's like, you lead the way. Yeah.
And there's like a random guy sitting in a room and there's like a guy in the bathroom.
I know. I was like, what's that guy doing?
But there's no, it's not like, hey, get out of the shot or, oh, we need to include you now that you're in it. It's just sort of like, oh, maybe no one noticed.
Yeah, I'm like, we don't care who that guy was.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Bee Gees documentary?
Yeah.
I did not think I would care, and I was wrecked by that documentary.
Really?
Like,
I forgot about that.
And then I got into their music, like, hard. Because you kind of think Bee Gees are disco, and there's so much more. And then they have such a bad time with disco. They're like so torn down. Everyone's like, disco sucks, and they would like burn their records and like tell them to eat shit.
Really?
And then they also have all this crazy stuff that goes on like in their lives. It's just, it's actually a really, really good documentary.
But I know, what was the whole disco sucks movement? Like, what was that about? Why were people so mad about
racism
disco?
And homophobia.
Well, moving right along.
Racism and homophobia. Oh.
Yeah. So that's why that.
But weren't the Bee Gees white?
They were definitely appropriating it from like black. It started in like black gay disco clubs and stuff. But they like brought it to the mainstream, and then everyone's like, actually, it's rock and roll's the only thing, and let's have white people make it.
Yeah.
Fun.
It's really interesting though.
Great documentary.
And like, yeah. And I just didn't ever think I would care, and I did. But then I think that's your point, Stephanie, that like the way what we expect out of a documentary now, where I'm like, that gives me this like huge retrospective on like the way things were and the way they became and blah blah blah. And this is just capturing a moment in time. It's a very different thing.
And they're all fucking around. And that's what I was like whenever they would tell those stories, and you could tell they were like, even when Robbie Robertson's like, oh, ask me that again. And then he like asks him again. And then he kind of says it, but it's not, it's like, oh, he wanted to get that just right in the way in which he was telling it.
But it's so funny to leave in the like, say it again, because it's like, obviously you're supposed to cut around that.
Yeah. Right.
But showing how much he cared, I think like, and the same, like, oh, we weren't going to talk about that. Like they, just what they were going for, I guess.
Yeah, I think I agree. It was like not polished. It was just like a moment in time, like just encapsulated.
But at the same time, I feel like what they were saying, they were trying to make it very specific. Like, here's what I will share about this.
Mm.
Like, it's like you're capturing it, but like it's controlled.
Right.
But yeah. Was there any song that really worked for you, Nicole, or that you were like into?
Yes. Wait, which one was it? There was a lady singing on it. maybe it was The Wait with the singers.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one.
And then Coyote with Joni Mitchell, I love that. And she was like, but it kind of felt like she was like a featured extra. Like, it didn't seem like mm-hmm. they were like, to that point, actually, Stephanie, it really felt like they didn't even, I thought she was almost backstage part of it. Like, I'm like, get her out there. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
And then she's there at the end. And then they have Emmylou Harris, who I'm not that familiar with, but I associate with like later music.
And what was that part where they were like on a different stage? Throughout?
Yeah, I think there was like two songs that they recorded separately that weren't part of this that night. That they
and
were
then
like
they added it in.
Like with the Staple Singers, and I think with Emmylou. It was like very clearly suddenly on a soundstage. And
yeah.
Then there's the ending when they sing I Shall Be Released, and it's Bob Dylan, Ronnie Wood mm-hmm. from the Rolling Stones, Ringo Starr from the Beatles, and Joni and like many other people from the show already, and Van Morrison. And it was almost like I was like, you can't have 20 people with distinct voices and styles sing the same song. I'm like, I just want to hear one of them. Like, I'm like,
I liked it. It felt like We Are the World.
It like, was yeah, like that.
Like, ooh, okay.
But it's like you have Van Morrison like doing his thing. And I'm like, you got to blend in there a little, buddy.
And you want to know something shocking about this movie that like I read was that it got financing because Bob Dylan said he'd do it. And because he did it, which I'm like, wow, even in the 70s, it came down to like, you could have all those people and it wouldn't have financing. And then Bob Dylan
because he had the most Instagram followers.
There's some interesting stuff in the production where during the show he said he didn't want to be filmed as much as they wanted to film him, and they almost like in the middle of the show they almost like had this whole thing, and they knew that they were only getting the money if Bob was in it, and so like he almost it was like this big panic backstage. And then
do you feel like he was trying to not take the spotlight or what?
Did you read this, Stephanie? Do you want to talk about it? Yeah, go for it.
Well, he basically had something coming out, right? He had a movie coming out that he was like, well, I don't want this to sort of overshadow my movie. And they were like, so he's like, I'll still perform at the concert, but you can't film me. And then they were like freaking out because they only got the money for the movie. And so right leading up to the show, he was like, I'm not doing it. And they sent in, I think, one of the producers to talk to him. And he agreed to let them film him for two songs, which again is so crazy that they were making a documentary and didn't film any of that. Like, that's like, if you were making a documentary now, you'd be like, oh my God, shit's hitting the fan
right.
the day mm-hmm. of. Like, that would be like gold in your documentary.
That's so true.
And it's like completely not even included.
Do you feel like that's because of reality TV? Like, why do we, like, we want some drama.
It's like, I want the juice. I want to know what's happening behind closed doors. I want to know about the drama, how it almost didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like in J-Lo's documentary where nobody wanted to do her movie.
Oh, my God.
Have you seen those clips? I haven't seen the documentary.
No,
yet.
I haven't seen either of the things.
I haven't.
Well, there's a bunch of people who are, like, unavailable, and J-Lo literally is like, I say that when I don't like the script. Oh. What do you mean they're unavailable? It's just for half a day. And it's like, oh, this is...
Well, don't this tell everyone you say that when you don't like the script, because then it makes it look like it's bad.
Unavailable.
Oh, no.
But I also think there's, like... culturally, you don't protect people anymore. It's like,
correct.
Oh, well, they fucking did that. And I want people to know what this person's really like. Whereas they wanted to like preserve him for the sake of like the movie.
Cause mm-hmm. it makes it look cooler that it went well with him than that he didn't want to do something that they wanted.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Mean. There is a lack of privacy now. In a way where, like, back in the day, it was like, oh, we'll just preserve this person's private life. We're not going to put everything out there, you know?
Right.
Which is kind of nice.
It is nice. That time? I think we should in that sense alone. Everything else, like, I feel like now though it is like you expose everyone for everything they do. Mm-hmm. Like the second it happens, like so-and-so stormed off the set of whatever, like we know about it, like right when it happened or, you know, it's just, it is like,
and you can't live with that duality. It's like, I can't stand that anybody loves this person if only they saw on a day-to-day basis the hell they cause. And you, it's like people can't, it's like that truth. It's like, ugh, you must know.
Yeah, where like, I think it's kind of that thing where like, when we were growing up, I mean, I've heard like movie, people who are like movie stars then, like kind of say there are no movie stars now. Like I saw, I was reading something about this, but like, that like we would see it as like a sort of separate entity and be like, they're a movie star. And then like we'd get tabloids, but that was like all we got. And you kind of wonder if they're fake and then that's it. And then you don't have the Instagram of them showing their real life, which feels so accessible and like too accessible with a lot of people where you're like, wow, I can see inside so-and-so's home right now. This is like, this is great. It's cool. But then it takes away that mystery that we like so much about people and makes movies more fun.
Yeah.
So this movie was considered one of the greatest music documentaries and concert films ever made, but drummer Levon Helm wasn't happy with the final version. He felt like the entire thing was driven by Robertson and Scorsese and that the film makes the rest of the band seem like Robertson's backing band. Kind of true, because there are, I was actually surprised by how much the drummer was singing. And
I was too.
I was like,
what's this drummer doing?
He's a big part of these songs. But we didn't get, he didn't talk too much. We got a good amount out of him though, honestly. I did feel like he spoke up. He was the one talking about pussy, wasn't he?
Was he?
Yeah.
Pussy. Robertson loved the movie and he was proud of what he accomplished with Scorsese. I can't say that man's name. Scorsese.
We gotta work on it. I need Scorsese. Someone to say it, Stephanie.
Well, I always wondered if it's because I've heard people say Scorsese, which is what I say, and then Scorsese.
Yes. And I say Scorsese, but then I'm always going like somehow I feel wrong.
I do feel wrong. Someone will tell us, you know.
We'll find out when we're done recording this and then they tell us in months.
He went on to collaborate with Scorsese for decades, working on the music for his films Raging Bull, The King of Comedy, The Color of Money, Casino, Gangs of New York, Shutter Island, The Wolf of Wall Street, The Irishman, and Killers of the Flower Moon. Are we watching all of those?
Not all, but many.
Yeah,
we're going to see Raging Bull, Casino, Gangs of New York, Irishman and Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh man.
You sound excited.
You're so good.
No, I'm excited too. I am excited. But he so he made like music for the films?
He was like a music supervisor and like helped with the soundtracks for all of those films.
Oh, interesting. That's crazy. That's like a very long relationship.
I feel like he really like made this movie and then was done. Like that's what blows my mind about him is that he really did it. It's like he didn't perform again and he just went and did movie stuff and studio stuff with him.
Yeah, because it does feel like one of those things that you see people say like we're gonna stop and then they just keep going and it's fine, but like they actually did.
Yeah, I think the band went on like without Cher. Robertson.
Cher had a farewell tour for years and then landed in Vegas. She'll never stop.
I love Cher.
Same.
Me too.
She, every interview with her, I'm like, this is the best interview that's ever been done. Much of the I don't know how I feel about this. Much of the music we hear was actually overdubbed later in a studio.
Oh.
Okay. The band's producer, John Simon, later said Richard wasn't singing well, Rick's bass was out of tune, and Robbie wanted to improve his guitar solos. The great thing was that Levon Helm didn't need to do it over. He got it right the first time.
Wow.
In a film Helm came to loathe, he looked and sounded the best during the band's live performances. They all were like, plink, plonk, plunk. Can we do that later? Like, they did 5 hours and they were like, we sounded like shit. Like,
everyone there is like, it was the worst concert.
We hated it. It was 5 hours long. Nothing was in tune. Everyone was off key, but I got some turkey.
I had cranberry sauce. That's so crazy. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more The Last Waltz after this.
Do you want to make your mom smile? Start Mother's Day with flowers or surprise her with gifts from the brand she loves. And guess what? It's delivered with the same day with DoorDash. Get 50% off your next order of up to $15 when you spend $15 plus on your next flower, convenience, grocery, or retail order now on DoorDash. And the promo code is NEWCOMERS. Listen, moms are a gift. I know that best. So give her the best this Mother's Day. Select from hundreds of expertly crafted bouquets to the best of tech to self-care essentials delivered right to the door. Get 50% off your next order up to $15 when you spend $15 plus on your next flower, convenience, grocery, or retail order now with the code NEWCOMERS. That's NEWCOMERS. Order using DoorDash today. Terms apply. Get a Mother's Day gift as unique as she is with DoorDash.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Auraframes.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Auraframe.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Auraframes are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Auraframe, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
And we're back, and this is the new Academy Awards, a new segment. Despite his films having been nominated for over 100 combined Academy Awards, Marty himself has only won one. But so far, he has won 4 new Academy Awards, the Newcomers franchise prestigious annual awards in excellent in Scorsese movies.
Scorsese.
just going to get wilder and wilder as it goes on. Scorsese.
So Anya and Allie and or will read off the nominees to us and we will all vote on what we think should win. Okay.
All right, here we go. Best line delivery. The nominees are It's a Goddamn Impossible Way of Life. That was Robbie Robertson. Or The Greatest Priest on 52nd Street and on the streets of New York were the musicians. They were doing the greatest healing work. They know how to punch through music, which would cure and make people feel good. And that was Garth Hudson.
I mean, I think it's a goddamn impossible way of life.
Yeah. I like that. It's very curmudgeon-y.
Like, and it felt like his whole mood the whole time. Like, there's no way we can do it again.
Okay, beautiful.
Like, he also kept being like, I feel like he was just like, if we keep going, we'll die.
Like, what's the message? And then he names all those people that like the road got when he was like Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin.
Yeah. It's not really a thing now. Everyone's like, I could keep doing it.
Yeah. Now it's, yeah. It's like, I think they have people being like, yeah, you're on a private jet. Don't do too much cocaine. Just drink a little less.
Yeah. Everyone's doing fine.
Okay. Our next award is for Best Dressed. We have the nominees are Bob Dylan, Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, and Levon Helm.
Okay, so there's a scene where he has like a trucker hat that's like sitting atop his head and it looks like it was filmed yesterday. Like, I literally was like,
it does look very current. And it literally he didn't say, oh, I better put this hat on so it doesn't fly away with a gust of wind. Just truly sitting.
That was the only time I thought he was attractive. Yeah. Was when he had that hat on.
It helped a lot with just the shape of everything going on there. Neil Young, no. It's a no. It's not attractive. He's very sloppy. I mean, his voice is iconic, but he's I don't enjoy exactly the
He looks like a murderer.
There we go.
A little.
And Bob Dylan, I'm really not attracted to. Like point blank. I have no interest. Joni Mitchell, I thought looked beautiful. She had.
I'm gonna go with Joni Mitchell. I think she looks stunning.
She has on like a leotard, like a skirt, and like beautiful layered beaded necklaces. Mm-hmm. And her hair is just. She's so simple. She's so like just classic beauty.
Elegance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she wins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And then we kind of did this, but best soundtrack song. Helpless with Neil Young, The Weight with the Staple Singers, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down, or the finale, I Shall Be Released.
I really like The Weight.
I did too. I thought that was great.
Oh, go ahead.
No, please.
No, please.
No, please. You.
Well, you didn't say this one. Did you say it makes no difference?
No.
That's not nominated.
You can write them in. You can write
in. I'm writing that one in. That's
I want to write
song.
In the Van Morrison song. I don't remember. They sang Radio, but is that
Caravan,
what
I think.
Oh, okay. Because maybe he blended two songs together in some way. Or maybe that's what that's called. But I really liked it. But I would vote for The Weight too, because I thought that was great. And I've never heard, I don't think they're ever on that in like a typical release of that, right? The Staple Singers. Mm-hmm. It really added like a great layer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations to all the nominees.
Now it's time for Scorsese, where we read reviews and we give a score to this film. So we read reviews from Letterboxd, and then we'll each give a one-sentence review ourselves and a star rating for the movie. And if you don't know by now, you better fucking know that Letterboxd is a social platform where people can write in their reviews of their own films. And we have our own Letterboxd at Newcomers, mm-hmm. which we learned a couple days ago
yeah,
that all truly. Of our reviews are listed on, because that makes so much sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And I
thought about it.
Can't believe I didn't put two and two together like a little idiot.
Yeah. So you can follow us and see what we've thought of every movie we've ever watched. And there are so many, as you know.
Mm-hmm. And this review is from Logan Kenny, who said, "Who cares if it's real? It's beautiful anyway. Perfect movie."
Oh, wow.
Stephanie, do you want to give your star and one sentence review?
Okay. Oh, I see. Of the movie. I thought it was just something off what he said. Okay,
yeah, what do you think of that review?
Yeah, what do you think about Logan Kenny?
We should just make it like an inception of like...
No, like, it doesn't make no sense. Okay, I'm going to give this movie... What's the top? Four? Five?
Five.
I'm going to give it a 3. And my review is, they were cool then, but losers today.
Oh my God, I love it.
Okay.
On your alley, do you have a review for us?
Yeah, I'm going to also go 3 stars. And I'm going to say it made me consider growing my hair long and having a middle part. And that's about it.
That's good stuff to bring into
All
your
right.
life. Yeah.
I'm going to give it 4 stars, and I say that it's the original celebrity self-made documentary.
Ooh.
Yes. Okay.
Because I feel like it you is. Can tell that Robbie Robertson was like, include this, don't include this. And now everybody's like, that's the Beyonce documentary and the Lady Gaga documentary.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I'm going to give it 3.5 for capture. It captures a moment in time very beautifully, and also captures a lot of my favorite songs from high school and gives context to them. And it's fun to see all these people come together in this way. It is very like We Are the World. Like you're mm-hmm. like mixing in all these people. Also, aren't they, this is unrelated to my review, but aren't they doing this again? Like there's like a reunion of this or something, or that already
of the
happened?
Band?
Or this happened like years ago? I don't know. I saw something.
Most of
when
them
I was...
have died.
Okay.
No. Oh no.
I think,
saw something.
Right?
Let me see. But Nicole,
Robbie
please.
Robertson.
tell us what you think of the movie.
So my star rating is, I think, a 3, maybe 3.5. Even though the music was not for me, I did feel transported. And I did enjoy it sometimes, and I thought the cinematography, I thought all seven cinematographers did an excellent job.
All seven of you crushed it. They did do a Last Waltz tour in 2022, but it looks like it might be something complete. No, it is the same. It is this epic tour continues the tradition of capturing the excitement of the band's historic 1976 Thanksgiving concert, hailed as the greatest concert of all time. And then there's just, but there's pictures of people, I just don't know who they are. And I'm like, they must be people from something.
Get together.
I don't know, but it's a lot of big bands probably are musicians. But this is, right? What are you seeing this, Anya?
I'm seeing this. I just don't know who any of these people are.
Me neither. I'm so confused.
And no offense to them.
No. I mean, neither. I mean, I'm like, I don't mean to offend anyone. I'm literally just going like, they don't look old enough to have been there the first time. And maybe they're just doing tributes or something. It happened and it was amazing. So
yeah, I don't know. It looks like it was amazing.
They're like famous musicians, you know, but not, they weren't obviously not any of the original members, but maybe like in other iterations, and they're maybe doing a tribute.
What's his name in Queen? Adam Lambert.
That's right.
I loved when he jumped into Queen. I was like, right? That's amazing.
He's got a great voice.
It's so cool. It's one of those things where you're like, he grew up listening to this and then he's the lead singer. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
His voice is because of American Idol.
One of the best shows ever.
I love American Idol.
So do
Has the voice produced any singers that we know?
We're never talking. No one is ever talking about people from The Voice. It's always American Idol. Isn't it? That is interesting. But they're all amazing singers, obviously. Everyone's slapping their buttons and spinning around to see them.
Everyone's slapping their buttons. Yep, that's the premise of the show. Slap them buttons.
I mean, say how you love The Voice in American Idol, and then this movie, it's like, meh.
I think they have bad taste.
They have labels.
Our true taste always comes out. It's always shocking to even ourselves. Uh-huh. But like, American Idol, by the way, used to be like the meanest show ever. I mean, like, when you think back, they would bring in people where like they clearly couldn't sing and they're like, get in there, go
sing. Get in there, do it.
And then
they're going to love you.
They're so confident. And then everyone's like, you're a piece of shit. And like, we're at home like LOLing and we're in eighth grade.
Lauren, you said this like a few years ago, and it makes me laugh so fucking hard about what is the woman's name who was like, she sang like from Les Mis.
Susan Boyle.
That you were talking about how mean that setup was, where they like, she comes out and then they like, they do like audience shots of like, ew.
It's like, they're like, there's no way.
Mean.
They're like, there's no way this
there's
could
no
be
way
good.
She can sing. This yeah. old lady.
Yeah, they're literally, their faces are like, ugh. And then she sings, and then they're all like, oh. And then they literally say, like, all of us in this room thought otherwise. Like, we all thought just like the weirdest, like, terrible, ugly person. And she's just like, thank you.
I know, it's so messed up. And it makes
so
no
sad.
Sense that you would assume someone can't sing because of how they look. It makes no sense. But like, that's also like so much of our culture is like, all singers are hot, basically. And it's like, that's not actually how life is, but like, we only put them up if they're like, we like to look at them too. It's awful.
God.
What an awful, awful.
Poor Susan
awful
Boyle.
Thing. She's doing great, right? Didn't she?
Where is she now?
I don't know. She must have made tons of money singing.
Ooh, she looks good.
Let's see. She got every surgery.
Nice haircut. Ooh, she got some wing liner
on.
She does look pretty, though.
She did. You know what? Because she didn't. I don't know what's going on. Her hair does look really nice. All right.
It is funny. She looks like a nice 40-year-old woman, and everyone said, ew, which is so mean.
It's so crazy.
And then she's like, I dreamed a dream. And everyone's like, holy
and everyone's like, oh my God, she dreams? But she's so ugly.
How could she ever?
It's so awful. You've taught us all a lesson.
That really was like part of it.
Yeah.
And now I think it's much nicer, though. I think it's much more like we just send in people who are good, and then they get cheers, and then we just see how far they go. And
but society. I'm also looking at Susan Boyle. She wasn't ugly. She just wasn't wearing makeup, and she didn't know what to do with her hair. And everyone said, we hate that you can't figure out your look.
Which is so, I mean, it's like, that. It's not, she didn't care, probably. She was like, I love singing and like.
Right.
She really has a full life. And she's like, I don't really, you know, care about styling my hair a certain way. And then everyone's like, that's your biggest flaw.
Make fun of her dreams too. Like, she's like, I want to be like Eileen Page. Everyone's like, oh my God, you and your good luck.
I bet they probably too, like, she probably thought they were going to put makeup on her before they sent her out on TV. And they were like, no.
No, sorry. You got to get out there just like that.
Yeah, I was listening to Kelly Clarkson on Smartlist, and she was talking about how she doesn't care about like hair and makeup. She like kind of hates having it done. Like, she appreciates it, but she's just like, it's not my typical like day-to-day thing. And that was like an issue when she was filming American Idol, that like when they would shoot her documentary style, like when it wasn't like on stage, she never had hair and makeup done. And they were always like, don't you want to do that? And she's like, no, I don't, just, this is my life. You're going to come to my house and see my thing and whatever. But like, it is such an issue for, you know, productions.
Wow.
Hey, I love
her. Hard to be a woman.
She's one of the best singers we've got.
I think so. She's my American Idol.
She is mine too. First one, best one.
Yeah. First one, best.
Stephanie. Well, that's obviously why we came here to gather today.
Stephanie, do you have anything you'd like to plug?
No, you can just catch me at Largo in Los Angeles and Dynasty Typewriter and The Elysian with Ask Us Anything and Mae Martin Show.
So fun. Everyone should do that if you're in town.
Very funny.
And thank you so much for being here and talking about this with us. Your opinions are so funny. And we encourage everyone out there to write a review for newcomers on Apple Podcasts and rate the podcast on Spotify. Just click 5 stars because you love it.
You love
it. And we'll be back next week with Raging Bull, which honestly, I don't know anything about. I don't know what that means.
Either.
I don't know what that means at all. I don't know what that means at all.
We don't know. Is there going to be bulls?
Literally, is it Wall Street?
Is it Spain?
It could be anything. Hilarious.
Or yes, Wolf of Wall Street came later, but all right, we'll see. We'll see you then. Please watch the film, and we'll check it with you next week. Bye.
Bye. Newcomers is a HeadGum original hosted by us, Nicole Byer and Lauren Lapkus. Our executive producer is Anya Kenevskaya, and our producer is Ali Khan. Our theme music, editing, sound mixing, and mastering is done by Ferris Manchi. Listen to new episodes wherever you get your podcasts every Tuesday.
Was a HeadGum original.